All right. Well, I have a three-part question. Do you know how to drive? This is the first part of the question. And yes, I do know how to drive. If you ask, you know, a number of people, 80% of them would say, I'm good at it. And if so, the second part is, if so, who taught you? My dad taught me. And the third part is, what was it like? And learning to drive from my dad was a challenge. But he let me learn in his truck, which at 16, it became my truck. And I drove that truck until it went to the scrapyard. But we learned in the woods. We owned a few acres of land with some trails out there. And he would just put me behind the wheel and move the seat up really close. And then I would drive, you know, bags of corn out to where it needed to go and drive around on the farm a bit. I guess it started when I was about 8 or 9. He would just let me drive around because it was closed roads, you know. So by the time I got to be about 14, I had saved up enough money to buy this really junker 1974, I believe, AMC Gremlin. I had to wreck that car, but I loved it. My next car was the one that I kept for years and years, and it was a 79 Mustang, and it was a tank, and it was powered by the devil. It was crazy fast. You couldn't drive it in the rain, because you can't drive it in a straight line in the rain at all. Satan is my motor. Satan is my motor. My name is Jeff Everett, and you're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.
Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dettis.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life and the train tracks next to us have to offer.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today, I have written down bikey love.
Oh, yeah. That sweet, sweet bikey love.
Sweet bikey love.
We are in the studio with Paul and Caroline Zavikovsky. Did I pronounce your last
name
right?
Darlings of the bike community here.
Are we in the right interview? Bikey love? Are you sure you're not looking for Phil or something?
No, Phil's always out of the country as far as I know.
Oh, right, right. So, yes. So we're subbing in.
Right, okay. Yeah. And Caroline, you approve of this? You're okay with the designation?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. In a tone that indicates clearly otherwise.
I didn't realize this was so controversial.
Oh, thank you both for joining us. We appreciate that. You both truly are denizens of the, like when people think of the Portland bicycle scene, I would say they think of the kinds of people that you two are. And we'll talk about all of that in just a few minutes. So, no pressure, right?
Right now they're going like, what?
We have to represent all of Portland in this very moment.
You really do.
Yes, you do.
But all of Portland that no one knows anything about.
Oh, good.
Like,
great.
You know,
you're like Portland's Portland.
I can define what Portland is to those people who don't know.
Damn straight. Aaron, how are you?
You know, this all started when I wanted to change the cables and then decided not to change the cables.
Yeah? You think that's it?
I think so.
So we have problems with...
We just got off on the wrong foot altogether.
Possibly. If we had brand new copper transducing our vocal vibrances, then we would be okay.
Everything would be fine. Yep.
Well, I appreciate you going
out and finding
new cables.
We would not have insulted our guests.
Well, have we? I don't think we have.
Or at least embarrassed.
I am insulted.
We may have.
How dare you?
The description is flowery.
How dare you say we love each other?
It was supposed
you
to
don't
be a,
know. You don't know us.
Supposed to be a secret.
Not yet. We haven't done the interview yet. Then you can judge.
Seriously. Oh, man. Oh, man. Aaron, is there anything new? I know you've been in the process of getting a new hub for some time.
And made a public apology.
Which was nice of you.
Yeah. And Yeah. So I've decided I've got a hub on order now.
Okay.
Finally.
All right. Which is good.
The big reveal.
Ooh. And?
White Industries.
Holy shit.
But it's also in black.
Okay. So it's White Industries, but it's coming in the color black.
Yes.
To match your preferred aesthetic.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. It's cool. I hope you enjoy that when it arrives.
Oh, I will.
It sounds great.
Yeah. There's this sort of price gap, mm-hmm, or quality gap. Actually.
It's like there's the regular hub.
You have the Shimano Dior, like the XTs.
Uh-huh.
And those are a great touring hub.
Sure.
But they're a cup and cone hub. And so you should really service those at least once a year.
Okay. So for people like me who don't ever service their hubs themselves, what does that mean?
Well, you tell me what it means. You just bought a new wheel, right?
Oh, yeah, but they built it for me.
See what I mean?
I have no idea. It means I paid more for it? I don't know.
It means like you're going to need a new wheel once a year if you don't
service
service it.
So that means like you got to go back and make sure everything's in its proper place?
Right.
Okay,
right.
Gotcha.
Right. Yeah, and cup and cone, it's kind of messy. Mm-hmm. It's doable.
Okay.
I've resurfaced mine.
Okay, but there's grease in there.
There's lots of grease and bearings and mm-hmm. parts to lose.
Okay, yeah.
Having done it a few times, I don't like doing it.
No.
I really just want somebody else to do it. It's a lot of work.
It's not your preferred activity on a Sunday
afternoon. No, and you have to like worry about your wheel. Like,
right.
Man, did I do that right?
Right,
like,
it could just fall
apart.
So there's that kind, and then there's the sealed bearing hubs.
Ah.
Where it's just this cartridge of bearings that you slide in and out.
And if everything goes wrong, you just like replace the whole thing.
You just replace the cartridge of bearings.
I think that's what I have.
It's so much easier.
I'm pretty sure that's what I have.
That's what you got now?
I have no idea. Like I said, I don't really look at my parts. I tell my mechanic.
You ride them until they don't ride anymore.
I want this to work.
Yeah.
I go into Velocult and Sky says, "What's up, Parts Destroyer?" And I say, "Give me some new parts." That's like my everyday experience.
It's like, what did you break now?
That's the only reason.
And that's why you have the golden drink key, right?
I assume so. Yeah. Are we allowed to talk about that? I have no idea. It's the VIP coin.
Yep.
Pressed in copper in their basement.
Yep. I don't have it, but.
True.
I also don't destroy.
You should ask about that.
But Paul has it.
Oh, okay. So we're half. Oh,
you guys.
Oh, yeah. Which number? Well, we shouldn't talk about that in public.
Don't talk about my numbers.
It's like being in a secret society with a pyramid eye at the top and everything. So, yeah. I just have a thing.
Your thing, but I got to finish this.
Oh, you should finish the talk first, please.
So then you have the cartridge, the sealed cartridge hubs, and there's a pretty good price gap between the Shimano
haves
XTs
and
and it wasn't a gap I was willing to jump. I was willing to like maybe go halfway,
right?
And the ones in that price range, in the like 150-ish range, have had a lot of really mixed reviews.
Okay.
And this is hence my big public apology last week.
I see. And you were like, I have to go out and get a bunch more bottles to return for this.
Yep.
Okay.
And so after returning several bottles, I went ahead and jumped yet another $100 or so.
Okay.
And went for a $300 rear hub.
Oh, beautiful.
I probably shouldn't talk about prices. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. No, I mean, this is real. This is where we tell the public what's going on.
That's true.
In the bicycle
industry.
You
already said it was a white industry.
They know. They can look it up.
Yeah. And they know.
We've got things called the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Yeah.
There's nothing we can hide.
Really, at this point, there is very little we can hide. So first of all, you guys tell me if you want this included in your episode or not. Because this is the funniest thing that happened to me all week. And yet, I don't know if it's going to pass your muster for like, if you want it associated with your names on the internet or not. So, let me tell the story. You tell me.
I am so intrigued right now.
Yeah,
I feel
like, Paul, Caroline,
okay.
Do you want, like, this is going to like affect our entire life from now on.
Oh, I'm just saying, like, if you don't like the way this turns out, we can cut this
whole
thing out.
Well, Paul, your resume looks really good, but
except
when we searched your name online, this character, Brock,
he
tell
says
us about
thing.
Him.
So.
There is nothing you can hide. Remember, there's nothing you can
hide. We've decided to go in a different direction.
All right. Okay, so what happened is I went to the zoo with my family, my mom and sister and brother-in-law and nieces and nephews and friends all came down and visited, and we were going to the zoo yesterday. And we went and looked around. We saw the elephants. We saw the gorillas. We saw the orangutan in his hammock and everything. It was great. And so at the very end, as we were just about to leave, we're running past the otters exhibit, like the sea otters. And we walk up, and I'm like,
sexy otters.
I'm dumb, so I'm like, hey, Adele, you otter see this. Womp, womp, womp.
You otter see
and
this.
And so we go up to the glass where we're like watching the otters, you know, and there's just one. He's like floating on his back in this pool of water, and it looks like he's, you know, he's like licking something or whatever, and so he's like on his back floating in the water, and Adele's like, you know, what is that? Is he playing with a ball? And we look closer, and it turns out he is performing an act of
fellatio,
self pleasure. Yes. And he's doing it with gusto, and he's all by himself, just kind of like entertaining himself on this beautiful sunny Saturday Portland afternoon. And it takes
Portland.
It takes Adele. I figure
what
it out.
What a waste of a sunny afternoon.
I would say I figure it out within a minute of watching. I'm like, oh, what have I done? I didn't mean to draw her in and make her look at this.
And at that point, you can't look away.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And true. So I'm looking at this otter, and I'm like, oh, we should really go. And, you know, there are, like, families around and everything. I'm like, well, let's not make a scene. Let's just move on
let's
and get this over with. As if the otter isn't already doing
it. The otter's the one making the scene.
Right, right. But the otter doesn't give a fuck. He's just like, you know, I'm here every day. You're going to see what you're going to see. It's like
it's your fault for putting me here.
This is like the Truman Show.
This is
show.
What you get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, anyways, it takes Adele and our friend who we're all looking on. They're like, what is that? What's happening? And it takes like 5 minutes to find out, like, oh, yes, in fact, he is in fact giving himself head. And so that happened. So if you want to go to the zoo and see something interesting, occasionally that is the case. So you guys tell me, is that something that is it okay if we leave that in the show?
Sure, that's acceptable.
Okay. Thanks. We do have we have the explicit tag on iTunes.
All the otter videos I see online are like the cute little otters holding hands. I never see that.
So we need a counterpoint.
The sign of otters, I didn't know. Yeah.
Right. And I said as we were walking away, you otter not. So, anyways, neither here nor there. Kind of dumb.
I like when this all started because you wanted to. Because
you
an
just
otter
needed
pun.
To. Yes, you needed to
and
do
then
this pun
you just
here.
Exposed everyone to otter fellatio.
I think the otter himself was the one doing the exposing, but yes. But yes.
Pun,
yes.
But purely because you need to say this pun.
Well,
this drew everyone in. Like, oh, I'm going to be really clever.
That's how I
and
got
instead,
myself.
Instead, everyone yeah. will have nightmares.
I know.
Like, every time they're looking at a cute otter, like, eating a clam on his belly.
Oh, yeah. Clams. Man, oh, man. Tasty. So, anyways, that happened. So, everybody, go to the zoo. That's our...
Go to the zoo. Watch the animals.
You want to see something
pleasure
fun?
Themselves.
Yeah. Anyways. All right, then.
I've been to the zoo. I love going to the zoo. I love our zoo here.
Well, yeah.
I've yet to bike all the way up to the zoo, though.
It's way up there on the west side in the Tualatin Mountains.
But of all the times I've been to the zoo, I've never seen an animal either pleasure themselves or their partner.
I thought you would just pause there. I've never seen an animal.
I've never seen. I did.
Like
I did pause.
They know you're coming, and they just run.
Get the fuck out! Shit, it's him again. Run!
Well, and I was wondering, like, don't zoos must have some sort of like emergency policy, right? Because like zoos are obviously they're like the full spectrum of animal life, but they're also family friendly places. And so, like, what happens when the animals are like engaging in?
That's just nature, man.
Yeah.
I know, but it just seems like that's the sort of thing that maybe they would have some sort of. Like, you know, some attendant to just like usher the young ones on. Like, go look at the elephants. They're great right now. I don't know. But speaking of animals, let's talk about you guys because.
So we're animals.
No, I was thinking of
at
your
pod. At least you didn't say speaking of fellatio.
In otter news.
Oh, yeah.
Hang on. So I just wanted I wanted to make the transition. A much more wonderful and cute animal to see in public is your pug Rando, because how long have you had Rando in your family?
Rando is 2 years, a little over.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you was Rando a puppy when he showed up?
He was.
Okay.
He was a puppy when he showed up. I was very much looking for a small dog for bicycle riding.
Ah.
So that was the goal. So like pug, Boston Terrier, some sort of pug mixed breed with dragons. I could care less as long as it was about the size of a like front basket.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you first the bikes and then like we want a dog to complement this. Like Rando's an accessory?
The dog came and then the bikes, plural bikes came.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Rando is an excuse to have more bikes.
Why not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. So tell it, first of all, there's Rando, who is the cutest pug ever. And then there's the bike that Rando I've seen ride in. And obviously you said you have multiple bikes, but the one I'm thinking of is the one where there are special accommodations for this this little man.
Yes, yes. So Rando Awesome. As he's known, full name.
Oh, that's his last name?
Well, yes, and we'll have to tie this into, like, possibly some of our origin story, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
But Rando Awesome is
Were you bit by a radioactive spider?
He's a radioactive pug.
Gosh, that would be awesome. So cool.
But Rando has so maybe people remember the Oregon Manifest a few years ago, and they had a bicycle by Zeba Design and Signal Cycles that was a sidecar.
Ah.
And at the time, I had a freak bike that was built by Adam George that was a solid assembly. So it was fully welded together with a third wheel, which okay. I like to call the Deathmobile. If you've ever ridden with a sidecar before, you'll know that that type of bike is like incredibly dangerous
okay.
if it's not done right. It's just taking a corner, whatever. So I thought, hey, I'll put a pug in a sidecar. This would be great. And so I
incredibly dangerous. Let's put an animal in.
Yes, exactly. Living beings in Deathmobiles.
Twice as good.
Yeah, I know. And then race it around town.
Seriously. Whoa.
But so I decided that it would be the most adorable thing ever, like putting a pug in a sidecar bicycle.
Right, because pugs are adorable, number
one. Pugs are adorable. Pug on a bicycle,
twice
even better. Yeah. Pug in a bicycle sidecar.
Exponentially.
Cute adorable. Overload.
That's yes. exponent three.
Yeah. And Caroline can attest to this, is we'll be biking down the street and I'll have the sidecar bike with Rando in it. And people will just like see it and they'll just be like, oh! And I'll be in front of this. And so I'll just kind of hear this, oh! It's kind of like fade away as I bike past them as they just kind of like fawn over the bike and just kind of like, pug!
It's true. Yeah. It's true. It's just like pure smiles, like a wave yeah. as we pass.
I actually had a person yes. like verbally swear off a car who had pulled up next to me at a stoplight because the car had ruined her photo of me on the bike with the pug.
And that's why cars suck.
She just flipped out at this car. And I just was just like, don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact. Go green light, go. And just kind of sped away from this
I
scene.
Was taking a picture of this guy right here.
It was really intense. So
don't include me.
Yeah.
Seriously.
And the sidecar, as it's known, is the Pug-O.
The Pug-O.
It's Peugeot, but I've eliminated a letter.
Oh!
And it's the Pug-O.
That makes perfect sense now. Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Was it a standard Peugeot or was it a specialty frame?
It's absolutely nothing to do with French build at all. I think the only thing that its soul was there is that it was a BMX frame that Adam George had then constructed on a shopping cart, like side cart frame. And actually, Phil at Metro Feeds had built the wooden box portion of it.
Oh, Phil built that?
Yeah. I did the AutoCAD of it, and I had him cut out the plywood and assemble it for me. So he actually did that, which is really nice of him.
So awesome.
Yeah, and then Blackstar Bags did all the fabric work for a front bag, and I have like a rain cover for it, toe straps. It's all matching, red, yellow, orange.
Oh, that's
orange.
So good.
Yeah,
so this is a professionally built Pugmobile.
Yeah. Yes, it's quite a bit of like labor of love and time and money that went into
fabulous.
It.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, just for the pug.
Nice. So let's talk about
Has he ever thanked you? Has he ever said thank you?
Every day.
Oh, okay.
Every day. I get home and he demands that I sit on the couch so that he can sit on my lap.
He doesn't speak English.
He knows
love.
So
this is a thank you like
which is in the theme. He love. Like,
right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense. I was going to ask, we've talked about the pug, so from there, I want to move on to how you two met, because there is a bikey past in your past. You guys both are fans of bicycle touring, so tell us about the meet. Is this a meet cute, as it were?
Dramatic pause.
I mean, the first time we met at all was on a Cycle Wild trip.
Okay.
And then I think every time we had met each other subsequent to that was some sort of bike thing. So did STP and... Mm-hmm.
The Seattle-Portland bicycle race?
Yes, that nice. One.
Did you go officially registered, or did you pirate the race?
Officially registered.
Oh, nice. You got the number on your back and everything.
Oh, yeah. 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 Got the, like, excellent peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at every stop.
Nice. I was allergic to peanut butter.
Oh, you were?
It's a horrible day.
I mean, he still is.
Wait, so you ate the peanut butter?
No.
Oh, no.
One of the lunch stops actually had some soccer matches going on, and there was some people actually selling tortillas and tacos, and it was amazing.
Okay.
I went and ate that food. It was so good. It's like everybody's eating their peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and I'm like, delicious taco.
And really, if you have a choice between a PB&J sandwich or a taco, which one would you choose?
Yeah. I mean, I love tacos. Fresh made on a grill in a park. Like,
seriously.
No brainer.
Yeah. It's very, very rare you can find a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on a grill. Those are the best kind, I'm sure, but it's yeah.
That's
that crunchy
really
factor. Yeah.
Does sound good.
Yeah.
Let's just stop recording for a while.
Do you want to talk about the Sunwind and Gears?
Yeah, so what was it? We met on a Cycle Wild event, and then we did STP together, and then we did a Move by Bike.
Yes.
And then we did Sunwind and Gears, and Steph Roth had... I had been hired to do the photography for the event as, like, a volunteer. And
it was, like, a organized bike ride for green empowerment? Maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
And going out and looking at the solar panel factory in Hillsboro.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
It was really cool.
And so we'd kind of, like, met up at multiple bikey events, and that was the one where... I was seduced with smoothies.
No.
Wait, what?
Seduced me with
smoothies. No, I recall it was you seduced me.
No,
with
you
smoothies.
Seduced me.
This is how you know it's love.
So after the event, Paul asked if he could come over to my house and make smoothies. And I was like, clearly this guy's hitting on me. Like,
wait, you suggested we make smoothies.
No. You said, can I come over and make smoothies? I was like, I mean... Come on.
Keep in mind, at this point, there was like multiple people that we were riding back on the Max from after the event. And it was like, hey, we should all have smoothies.
Oh, sure.
Caroline was like, yeah, smoothies. So
you're both fans. You like a smoothie.
We like smoothies. Yeah.
We like
Who
smoothies.
Doesn't?
Yeah.
Right.
Who doesn't? Long day of riding. Or
seriously.
Like,
hot, sunny day. Yeah. Smoothies. Sounds great. But so, yeah, I totally thought that Paul was like, you know, trying to hit on me, like,
okay,
you know, somebody says I'm coming over to your house making smoothies,
right? You don't just get that every day.
Yeah, I just wanted smoothies. I really was just like, yeah, we're having smoothies. Hey guys, let's go have smoothies.
right
yeah.
So that was kind of like one of the sparking incidents where you two spent some more time together and got to know each other.
That was the sparking incident.
That was it.
Yeah, we had hung out a number of times before in the smoothies event. The other people who were curiously just like bailed on smoothies at the last moment.
They were like winking at me.
Yeah.
Like they thought that he was hitting on me too.
We're going to bail.
Right, yeah.
We're going to deal Roger.
Yeah. Here. Suddenly it was just Caroline and I had smoothies.
Wait, where did everybody else go?
Yeah, which is fine.
It's kind of like good. You had like seven wingmen or something.
Smoothies for two is just as good as smoothies for four.
Maybe even better. Yeah. Beautiful.
Because I got a wife out of that.
Yeah, seriously.
What a bargain.
Yeah.
So we've already found our call to action for today. You want to find yourself a romantic partner, make them a smoothie. You guys have this epic honeymoon that I've heard of. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, where did you get married and then what happened after?
Let's take a slight step back first.
Yeah, okay.
So sort of dating for a while, and then the proposal, which I think pretty much came with the caveat hey, if we're going to get married, our honeymoon's going to be a cross-country bike ride. I think that was like the stipulation of the marriage.
Was written into the marriage. So.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how that went down for the conversation.
That was the only
right.
Prenup.
Please sign on the dotted line.
The only
if you haven't read the fine print. Hope you like bike touring.
But, seriously,
but fortunately, we both like bike touring.
Yeah,
so
right,
that worked out.
So you both had done a lot of bike touring before this, or?
We both had done some. I mean, nothing clearly as epic as what we did in our honeymoon.
I think the longest you'd done is like
a week.
Okay.
And I think the longest I'd done is like 4 days.
And we mentioned Cycle Wild, which is Portland's nonprofit dedicated to getting people on bikes outside camping.
Why, no, we have not.
And falling in love, I think, is in their mission statement.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
Yes, because there's a number of people who've gotten together like due to Cycle Wild, right?
Yes. Yeah, there is a number. Yeah, I was trying to think in my head of like the number of couples that I've met. Blanking.
Oh, it's okay. But all you kids out there that want to meet somebody, you know, ditch the apps. Yeah. Go out in the woods with a bicycle and a bunch of people.
Absolutely.
You'll meet somebody cool.
I make smoothies.
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm trying to remember. I want to say my first Cycle Wild trip, actually my only Cycle Wild trip that I've actually met the group and camped with, we were at Milo MacIver. And I want to say that was 2011. But I think, Caroline, I met you there. And I'm not sure if you were there, Paul, or not. But
I think that was when Paul was having his bachelor party.
Okay.
And I was like stalking him on Facebook from Milo MacIver.
Just to make sure everything's going all right.
Right, yeah.
Make sure he's safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Safety, yes.
Okay, right. But I remember like the wedding was
nothing
like impending
but safety
at that point.
That afternoon.
It was all neon. But yeah, so so you guys, you met, you got together. There were tender feelings. And then the wedding happens. This is on the coast, right?
Yeah, so
Oceanside, Oregon.
Yeah, so with the intent that our honeymoon was going to be a cross-country bike trip, we got married on the ocean as like, well, that would be the logical place to start. You start on the coast.
You
get married on the coast. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our wedding ceremony was kind of like the start of a journey, start of an adventure, start of a life together as kind of like mimicked by what would be the bike trip.
So it's like a beautiful metaphor.
Yeah, it was a very much a metaphor of like this trip where we're getting married is on the coast and there's like this logical path that we're going to take.
Yeah.
So. And we did stop in the middle of the ceremony and run and dip our toes in the ocean.
Right, so that was was like the kiss and then we ran to the ocean and like like didn't tell anybody that we were doing that.
I think
we told the officiant and then we just like... Like booked it. Like the photographers were like freaking out. As they're like, the photographer was like in like just like 10 feet out of like getting our kiss, and then we just like bolted at him, and I think he kind of like freaked out. He's like, you're coming at me! What did I do?
Well, it's a photographer.
You hired me. Don't knock the camera out of my hands.
Yeah,
it's a photographer's nightmare because like they're supposed to get like all the cool stuff, and then all of a sudden you throw in right like you're bolting for the ocean.
I think one of our favorite photos is actually. One of our best shots is actually like a really blurry photo of us, like hand in hand, just like you can see us smiling and just like running at the camera.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. And so did you actually leave like directly from your wedding on this bike tour?
Spent the night.
Yes, we at least spent the night. And the day after, we biked back from Oceanside to Portland with how many people from our wedding?
It was like 40 or something.
Yeah.
It's an entourage.
We had our family and friends did SAG support, so we had different stops along the way with like wedding cake for lunch and
We
had all of the like leftover wedding food as like one of the stops. So it was like and this stop is gonna be like leftover salmon and orzo. You know, it's like
Well, if you leave, that's the thing about a wedding is that oftentimes people leave before the food's all consumed, right? Like people get married and they leave on their honeymoon, like, and then there's all these people hanging around cleaning up, and there's just leftover food. So you might as well eat that stuff.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
and feed it to people that are biking alongside you. Yeah.
So that was awesome. That was really fun. We had like my cousins rode with us who'd never ridden more than 20 miles in their life.
Beautiful.
And they rode the 90 miles back.
Yeah.
Oh man. Did they make it okay?
Yeah.
They were safe?
They
didn't hurt themselves or pull any muscles? Or
they were really proud of themselves,
that's awesome.
Too. At the end of it, they were like, that was amazing.
So that's the thing.
It was really challenging because we did Nestucca River Road.
Oh, right.
Too, so.
We just talked about that last week.
Oh, right. Yeah.
This is the most beautiful bicycle road to the coast.
Yeah, except for the hills.
Except for the hills.
Yeah,
okay.
But it's great. Yeah. It's a wonderful path. So
yeah.
We had multiple people set up. And I think like one of the ones that was really fun is that our friend Fiona, who's British, wanted to do like afternoon tea.
Oh,
so
nice.
She's like set up like a tea stop like along the way. And at some point in time, our friends Brad and Kim, like they were like, oh, we're going to get fried chicken. And we misinterpreted that as like, it was suddenly like America versus the Brits. It was like,
fuck your tea.
The rest stop was now going to be like British tea versus American fried chicken.
Right.
And yeah, we were like, this rumor for miles.
And it just, we're like 40 miles. It just kind of like circulated. This rumor
tension.
Just kind of like grew. Yeah. Like everyone was like making it out. And we got there, and it was like, oh, the chicken's gone. We ate it all. It was our lunch.
They had just gotten a couple pieces for themselves.
Yeah. So tea wins out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tea always wins.
And cakes and crumpets,
because
right?
Because of selfish Americans.
And like cookies and, you know, like shortbread cookies.
Sure.
This could be a metaphor, right?
Yeah.
After Portland, did you take the Trans-America route? Did you go adventure cycling, or did you kind of chart your own?
Yes and no.
Okay.
We took the Northern Tier route for part of the way, and then we went off on our own and joined back up with it and different points, because Paul is from Minnesota and I'm from Michigan. So kind of when we got to the areas where we knew people, we ended up going off route a lot.
Right. And that's really the best way to do it, in my opinion, because, I think the adventure cycling routes are there to get you to the places you don't know how to get through. And then if you're from somewhere like Minnesota or Michigan, like you know those places.
No.
Okay.
So the route that we took, the Northern Tier through like Montana and North Dakota, are no longer the route.
Oh, true.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh,
ours was the last summer of the old maps before adventure cycling pretty much had to change their route to divert around
the fracking, the oil boom, the big trucks.
Yeah. Sure. So a lot of our stories could revolve around just like having to deal with crazy semi traffic and just like some of the cities that we get to where it's like, there's nowhere to stay.
Yeah. There is nowhere. I mean, I don't think that we ever stayed anywhere official in North Dakota, but I think that people put us up like the whole time. We loved the state. Everyone was awesome.
Oh, nice.
We met amazing people. But
yeah, like pretty much anywhere that was like maybe, you know, quote unquote, booked. Like, you know, like, oh, there's services in this town. It was like the town had just like kicked all of the truckers out of the park who were like squatting no longer was the city park available to camp in.
Right. It wasn't until these damn truckers showed up.
They were and they were camping there year round. And this is like Montana, northern Montana.
Right.
Like
right.
It snows and it gets really cold. Like, apparently they finally sort of like tent camp disappeared when I think it hit like -20.
Yeah.
And then like the city like instantly went in and was like closed. No more camping in the park.
Yeah. Nobody gets
which
to go
had previously
here
been there because of the adventure cycling.
Yeah.
They had gone in and like built those inroads. Like,
sure.
Hey, cyclists are going to come through. You should let them camp in the city park. But that wasn't allowed anymore.
What we're saying is oil ruins everything.
Yeah. Well, and with apologies to Todd the trucker, who I met last week. Cool guy. As far as I know, he doesn't camp out in the city parks. He goes to truck stops. He's working. He's doing his thing. The problem with all these North Dakota towns is that it's where everyone's influxed into that place.
I mean, from what we learned, I mean, the term trailer trash actually came from like the oil industry in terms of like,
really?
Truckers coming in and basically setting up camps.
Fascinating.
And that's actually the term developed from that, where it's like the oil boom, like people move in and they're there for a while and they kind of cause ruckus. They take a bunch of money and then when the oil's gone, they leave.
Right.
And this was complicated because this was also the year that Minot, North Dakota flooded.
Oh.
The entire town flooded out. And so all those people were displaced. And then a bunch of volunteers came in and they were all camping in the Walmart parking lot. And so there was just a huge housing shortage everywhere.
Yeah, everyone's trying to camp at the same place.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's intense.
All the truckers pretty much had the hotels booked up.
Yeah.
You know, there was like a bed and breakfast, apparently, like $200 a night or something.
Wow.
In North Dakota, yeah.
And it's probably beyond your budget for what you thought you would do.
Yeah. We ended up, one of the best stories I think we've ever had from our trip was in Minot, North Dakota, we stopped in, I think we passed it, and it was called the Blue Rider. And it looked on the outside of it, it had like a rusted, like broken neon sign with like grain belt beer.
Super hipster.
Yellow outside.
Yeah, total hipster.
You know, it's one of those where it was like a small building and it was like in a vacant lot to the left and a vacant lot to the right.
Yeah.
And it was like the Blue Rider.
Right.
It was like, hey, sweetie, we should go there. That looks great.
We totally won't get murdered.
Like this looks like the place we want to go. And we walk in and it was beautiful.
It was. Apparently the owner was like the art professor at the local college, and there was a bunch of really nice art up.
Yeah, it was like floor to ceiling, just like art paintings, like that's everywhere. And it was like good beer menu, good like spirit it was wonderful, like little place, and that's where all the locals went.
Yeah.
So
we hung out there. Pretty chatting
much for the
it
day, because nothing else
and
was available
in
Minot.
We didn't know where we were going to stay that. We still didn't know where we were going to stay that night. We thought we'd probably go to Walmart and camp with the other volunteers.
The rescue volunteers, yeah.
And then Paul is chatting up this guy.
He was a local organic farmer in North Dakota. And he has a house on his farm that he goes to. But the only reason he was in town is because his house that he owns in the city had flooded out. And so he was in the process of gutting the lower level, like just everything out of it, which is when we were biking around town, all you'd see is these piles of just debris, like sheetrock and furniture and clothing and just like everything just like rotting. I mean, just like out on the curbs, refrigerators, stoves, everything was just like out of the houses, like on the curb.
Yeah.
So they're just like massive piles. And he was like, that's what he was doing. He was basically gutting his house, all the walls. And he's like, hey, I have this abandoned house.
You want a place to sleep?
Would you like to sleep in my abandoned house?
I totally won't murder you.
He was a nice guy. I think he had already bought us a number of rounds. And, you know, like, it seems legit.
Sure.
I think a big theme of the trip is just, like, the power of human kindness.
Right on.
It's like, you think about this as, like, people in the world, like, the things are just falling apart. And our trip was literally the exact opposite of that. It was the kindness of humanity, tenfold. It was like, he was like, hey, I have this house. If you want to pitch tent upstairs, the upstairs was unaffected. It still has running water. Don't drink it. The toilet works. And you can just stay there for the night.
I don't think there were any doors on the ground level.
Oh, nice.
And open windows, which is why we had to pitch a tent. So the mosquitoes. And
there we go.
Yeah.
Because the bugs are out.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is North Dakota. Just, this
well, and after a flood, I'm sure the mosquitoes are out in like full force.
Right. Wow. Well, that's super cool. So it's the kindness of humanity. And it's like in the middle of a huge disaster, they say, hey, we've got a place for you.
Yes. Yeah. It was one of those amazing moments. And we had ton of those, like we met so many amazing people, we were so generous. You'd roll into a town and we had it down. I mean, we want to talk about this a little bit.
I mean, you know, like,
maybe you can talk
so
to us a little
nice
bit.
But you know, I mean, when you say you're on your honeymoon, like that just warms everyone's heart.
True.
So the first time that we ever ended up staying at somebody's house was we're in Havre, Montana. And Havre.
It's an Amtrak stop.
It is. We pretty much followed the Amtrak through
the Empire Builder. We pretty much followed the entire path of that, yeah.
So we were calling around trying to find a place to stay, and it turned out that the state swim meet was in town that day. So, you know, the three motels or something in Havre were all booked up, and this elderly lady overheard us, and then, you know, was talking to us, and we're like, oh, we don't have anywhere to stay. You know, like, wink, wink.
Whatever shall we do?
Hey, is there a city park we can, like,
do you know anywhere
pitch a tent
we can stay?
Local school, cemetery, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so then she came back and invited us to stay at her house.
Oh, super cool.
And that's kind of what we ended up, like, it was a little accidental that time. But afterwards, we realized, you know, we can go into a town, we go out to dinner, little, you know, local diner, and then we chat up some people and we ask them where we can stay. And, it, you know, if there's somewhere to stay, then they say, oh, go stay in the city park. And if there's nowhere to stay, then they suddenly feel responsible for our welfare.
Well, we can't leave these honeymooners out there in the cold.
Do you know of a place we can stay? If we die, it's your fault.
Leverage, yes.
Yeah.
Nice. We're on our honeymoon.
Yeah, I think I used that. Well, it was the first year that my wife and I were married. Was like, we, you know, we tried to go camp somewhere. We totally couldn't. And so we ended up knocking on somebody's door. I'm like, me and my wife over here, we can't, you know. It's like, if I was just some random dude, I think it wouldn't have gone as well. But if I'm like, me and my sad looking wife just can't find a place to camp, can we sleep on your lawn? And it's totally cool. So,
and I do think being a couple really helps.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I think a woman adds legitimacy, and then,
well, dudes are creepy. But, we can say this, right?
Sure. Yeah. Right. But yeah. No, if it was just me and another woman, then a dude wouldn't want to look creepy.
Oh, right.
You know, and wouldn't want to invite us.
I don't want to offer.
Right. Because I'm going to look creepy. So
you two girls want to come over and spend the night at my place? Yeah. It doesn't sound great. Whether or not your intentions are good, it just doesn't pan out so well. So
yeah, it's kind of the perfect combo, and definitely, like, throwing the honeymoon on top of that, like, opened amazing doors.
Right.
For us.
So if that leverage is available to you, this is a good tool to use when cross-country.
We have been on our honeymoon for 3 years.
Yeah.
It is amazing what you can get.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm curious, when you reached the places that were familiar to you, what was that like? Were you bicyclists in your former homes, like in former states?
Yes. Okay. That's actually a very curious story that doesn't get asked a lot. So I'm from Minnesota. And when we got into Minnesota, it was kind of like the first time, like, we were back in civilization.
Sure.
You know, having just gone through was Montana,
Fargo,
North Dakota.
Fargo was like a huge town.
Oh, man.
Us.
Holy cow. Biggest
enormous.
Town. Yeah. Enormous town of Fargo, North Dakota. They had more than one restaurant.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it was amazing. And so when we got to Minnesota then, it was kind of a lot of the state was actually bike path. Like, just the Rails Trails Conservatory,
really,
and like the Lake Wobegon Trail.
Oh yeah,
is a thing there.
It's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown.
Yeah, and they have an amazing bike path. Who knew?
Right, seriously.
Yeah, it's like 50 miles long. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, and kind of like
paved. The bike path is paved. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like, some of the bike paths in Wisconsin weren't paved. And this is like hundreds of miles, I think, in Minnesota.
You don't often get that. Yeah,
yeah. It was like a diagonal across the state, pretty much, like bike path, and so. It was great. I mean, we went through Minneapolis, St. Paul, amazing, you know, town. We had some, local friends kind of like, basically, chauffeur us via bike, around town, like show us the sights. Cause that was always the thing. Like, we would go into a town and like, see if we could find somebody to like, kind of like show us the bike infrastructure and kind of like get a feeling for the town and the city if we knew some people.
Right. Because that's way better than a map. Like, if you have human people.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, human people, yes. But people that can show you places to go and be like, hey, we know this area. We'll take you to the cool spots.
Yeah. I would say, like, that was great. But every time, as cyclists in Minnesota, we got off the bike paths and we were, like, interacting with cars. It was, like, some of the worst car drivers we experienced, I think, on the trip. We had to cross like a bridge at one point that was under construction, and it was a busy bridge, and we just had to cross, and we just had to take the lane.
Yeah.
And just had like an irate driver, like, just gun past us, like, just swearing and cussing us out, like, across this bridge. And it's just like, we have nowhere else to go. Like, this is the only bridge that we can use. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your problem?
What do you want?
Yeah, like, where should we go? So I think that was really interesting. I think, you know, for one, bike trails are great.
Yeah.
But the counter to that is that the general populace is not used to cyclists on the roadways, and they just don't know how to react and, like, don't understand why you're not on a trail. It's like, well, like, because I need to use this road.
Yeah.
So I think that was, like, that was Minnesota.
Yeah.
And then Michigan.
Michigan, I didn't do a whole lot of cycling in Michigan. I'm from the Detroit area. Yeah, it's not super cycling friendly. I did do a little bit of biking when I went to college in Ann Arbor. And so one of the routes that we took was, you know, a route that I had biked before. But when we got to Detroit, we wanted to do the same thing that we did in Minneapolis. We wanted to find somebody to bike us around the city. And I didn't have anyone in my immediate network. So I just started like emailing crazy. And I found this bike group and I emailed them and they sent it out to their listserv. And we got a response from this guy.
In like less than 24 hours.
Yeah, less than 24 hours.
The APB went out.
Right.
That's impressive.
Yeah, and so we got a response from this guy. And he's like, oh, you know, I'm from Dearborn, which is where my parents live. And
okay.
I'll come and take you through Detroit. And then like an hour later, he emails me back and is like, wait, are you, you know, did you go to high school with Lisa Rodriguez? And it turns out he's the brother-in-law of my best friend in high school.
Oh, that's fabulous.
So, yes, that was really fun. And so Rich and Mike took us all around Detroit, which was an amazing bike city.
Yeah, which was a really...
Mostly because it was totally deserted.
I mean...
Lots of good bike infrastructure because there's no cars because no one goes there.
There's like these six-lane roads with no cars on them. It's pretty amazing.
I was up until we got to Detroit and we're like biking through the town. I actually was like days beforehand. I was like worried. I was concerned. I was like talking to Caroline. I'm like, I'm really worried like how we're going to get through Detroit. Like this is going to be nuts. Like it's going to be scary and there's going to be cars everywhere. And like, is there any way we can avoid this?
Yeah,
and
it was, I mean, because Michigan drivers are... I were the worst drivers in our whole trip. And, you know, and there's gigantic potholes.
Yeah, the
like,
roads in Michigan were the
It was
the
pretty
worst.
Michigan was pretty rough. But yeah, then we got to Detroit and it was like
It was amazing.
Magical.
It was so good.
Compared to rural Michigan, it was great.
Yeah.
It was like the trails we were on were great. The roads were fantastic. Even if there were cars, it was you'd have like a 7-lane road. And there'd be like 12 cars.
Yeah. So there's plenty
fine.
Of room.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So like we just take like
on the road,
one,
whatever,
we take like the right lane, like the entire right
plenty
lane.
Of room here.
Yeah. So they were like, bikers, whatever. Yeah. Like I still have like 7 lanes. Like, oh, geez.
Yeah. And the other nice thing is that Rich and Mike have a lot of hometown pride. And so they were really intentional about what they showed us because they wanted to show off the good things that are happening in Detroit.
Sure.
So normally, you know, we go to Detroit and it's like the tour of urban blight and it's like, right. Oh, look at, you know, this
look at the train that doesn't run anymore.
Right. Yeah. So they tried really hard to show us all the cool stuff that was happening and, you know, the new bike paths and new pedestrian
the
bridges.
The DeQuinger cut
that's really nice.
A train rail that's been converted into a bike path, very similar to what you've seen in the Greenway in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Sure.
So they're doing the same thing. They're trying to develop it further. They've been putting in a lot of bike infrastructure. I mean, yeah, with so much road, it's like, well, all you have to do is throw down a share on this road and suddenly it's a bikeway.
Right.
So they're actually doing a lot in the ways of that for not a lot of pain. Like nobody in the community is really complaining about it because there's space available. So.
Well, and the other thing that they told us was that, you know, the city's bankrupt. So all of this is happening through small
like
businesses
and
volunteers and advocacy and nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're interested in like a simpler lifestyle, there are some places where that's very doable.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, because we probably should wrap up soon. We've got our news and mail to do as well.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about wrapping up the tour. Where did you end and how did you get home? What did it feel like when you were done?
So if we didn't mention it before, this was the Portland to Portland bicycle tour. So
okay.
Oregon to Portland, Maine.
Yeah.
For no other sake than that just sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Like you tell people that and it's very memorable. And be like, you're like, we're on our honeymoon. We're biking Portland to Portland. They're like, got it.
It's a good hashtag.
Good. Yeah. It was really easy for people to grasp.
Yeah.
And so that was our end destination. And that was a great little ending spot. If you've never been to Portland, Maine, it's really, really fun little town.
Yeah. Really delightful. And then we had a friend in Biddeford, Maine, I believe, which was like, I think that was what it was called. It was a little bit south of Portland. So actually getting to Portland was kind of anticlimactic because we got to Biddeford first. And the person we were staying with was a chef at the local brew pub.
Oh my.
And made us lobster dinner.
So that day that we went there, that day was the day that we touched the ocean.
Yes, and we touched the ocean. So
it was
like,
very much like the end had already occurred. It was right. just like we needed to get to Portland, Maine, because it was our end destination.
Just to say so.
Right.
Just to say
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, it's a cool town, but yeah, getting to the ocean and eating mm-hmm. lobster was.
Right. You can't complain.
I highly
about
recommend
that.
That to everyone. Yeah. At the end of any long right. bicycle tour, you should just have like I had two lobsters to myself.
Yeah, we each had two.
Holy shit!
It was really yes. amazing.
Yeah,
yeah.
And since he was a chef and he knew like the local fishmongers, he had it was like a penny a lobster.
That is beautiful, and that's where you should be eating lobster because like they're from there.
Oh yes, yes.
yeah,
yes, absolutely.
It was like
the freshest little sea bugs you've ever seen.
It was amazing. Mm.
That's
yeah.
beautiful.
So that was like our kind of like mental end,
yeah.
but we still had to get to Portland.
We're just like,
so we're gonna push on just a little bit farther, and then it's
was there like that discussion of like, should we do it? I mean, is
I think
some, we had a train
is it really worthwhile?
If you know didn't that have a train, I don't know.
the conversation of like, do we need to go any further? I think happened after Detroit.
Oh, really?
Because pretty much at that point, we had already established that yes, we could make it.
Right.
Physically, we can make it. And it's just after that point, it was just the mental game. Of like
the statistics
every day,
will prove us out. Yeah.
Yeah. Every day you have to get up and you have to bike. And you're kind of like, you've already done it in your head.
Right.
You've already finished it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you have to physically finish it. if you've never been to that point, it's a strange distinction. It's just kind of you have to push on just to like do it.
Right.
On paper. You know?
And
but,
and it was just like a math game at that point. It's like, okay, 60 miles a day, you know.
And up until that point, it was.
What's the straightest, flattest route?
Yeah. Up until that point, it was like, we've done 200 miles. We've done 300 miles. We've done 400 miles. And at that point, it was, you know, we have 200 miles left. We have 100 miles left. You know, it was like a subtraction. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like a weird like hump.
Like, as opposed to we've gone this far, it's like we have this far to go.
Yeah. It was like that was one of the very unexpected things of like mm-hmm. long touring that I did not expect was the sort of like the mental drain on it.
Right.
It's like, we still have to finish this. Like, do we? Like,
right.
but tell me it wasn't like some kind of like a dinner mint or something. Like when you finally got there and you did it, you're like, well, now we know.
I mean, it was
some
awesome.
Real pregnant silence.
I was still trying to figure out the dinner mint moment.
Oh, like, sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was really awesome to make it, but you know, it was definitely a mind shift for the last little bit.
Okay.
And we had already started planning for what we were going to do when we got back home.
Right.
Right.
Like, you're not planning for the next day or the next couple miles. You're planning for like, all right, when we're back in Portland, this is what we need to do.
And we still had really amazing experiences that last part. I mean, we biked through Vermont in fall.
Gorgeous. Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Watch the leaves change.
Yeah. It was amazing. So
that's really cool.
So we had a great experience, but just mentally it was different.
Yeah, totally.
But then we took the Amtrak back.
Okay.
Which was a lot of fun because we followed, like I said, we followed the Empire Builder for a lot of the route out.
So you began to see things you had already seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
We annoyed the shit out of the people next to us on the plane.
Wait, so
Gosh, here's what we did here. And then like 10 minutes later, here's what we did.
Yeah, we get it. You bike. Okay.
And it's in like super speed, right? Because it's like this took – we have a month of experience in 5 minutes. Yeah. Let's tell you about it.
So we're talking about like you didn't get the roomette or anything. You were just in two seats. And
no, we got the roomette.
Oh, you did.
And we annoyed the – because they have communal dinners.
Okay. So you're just like, let's have lunch. And we were here.
Yeah. So the lunches, if you've never been on an Amtrak and gotten a sleeper car, it's like community dinners and lunches. So you sit with random people every time.
It's like the montage.
So it's like the two of us and then like two random people. And so we would just inevitably like talk those people's ears
right.
off. And
you guys ever ride a bike? We rode a bike right over there.
Besides us, everyone on the train was like retired.
Right.
And like the cutest old couples.
And if you haven't done a sleeper car in Amtrak, it's so much fun because they treat you like you're royalty.
Right.
And
as opposed to coach, which I've done many times.
And it's so, I mean, I think that like the...
We won a bottle of wine
and
like a trivia thing that happened.
Oh, congratulations. That's great.
Yeah.
They do the free wine tasting.
Yeah, they have like wine and cheese, like afternoon
trivia, and you win. They give out bottles of wine.
Yeah, it's really hilarious. Like the wine tasting with the cheese is like they give you like the tiniest sip.
This is
and the rest of the bottle they like give away.
Right.
There's a real class distinction between the sleeper car and the coach.
That's because we're better than you.
That's right. I just remember the guy with the dinners for the people in the sleeper cars walking past my coach seat, not giving a fuck about anybody. Like, you know, get out of the way. I've got dinners to deliver. But that's why I've always wanted to ride in the sleeper car. So.
I love how they announce what's going on for the people in the sleeper car.
For the benefit of the
everybody on the train. It's not that much.
Attention, like, lesser citizens. Difficult. We will now be serving steak dinner to those
to have that are like two separate PAs or like two separate channels.
Right,
but
right.
I feel like the administration at Amtrak is like, nah, the plebs need to know. They need to know what they're missing.
They do.
But I am glad, and let me say that with no sarcasm in my voice, you guys got the primo experience, and that is awesome. It sounds great.
Edit
your goddamn honeymoon, so why not?
Yeah, advice for the listeners out there, if you ever get the chance to have a life event like that and just take the time off to bicycle tour together as a couple, do it.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a wedding. Like, say you paid off your mortgage. Let's go on a Amtrak trip.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now... So this wasn't mentioned. I know we got to wrap up, but like,
oh, sure.
were there times of like, it's your honeymoon, you know, and yet bicycle touring can be pretty stressful. Was it, this time of like, oh fuck, like what did we just do?
It's probably one of the most amazing things that you could do shortly after marrying a person is like, really, you get to see that side of the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with.
And fortunately, we got along. I mean, you know, it could have gone
a long
the other
worse.
Way. Right?
We ran into people who would be like, you're doing it the wrong way. You're supposed to bicycle cross country, then get married. It's like we did it backwards.
Yeah.
But
you're still here together.
Yeah. And we, I think, learned those little nuances of each other that, even to this day, we talk about, like, and we know and we acknowledge, like, for me, like, when it's raining and I'm on a bike or just in general out in the rain, like, I shut down. Like, I can't function. Like, I don't function. I don't make decisions. And if I try, it's a bad idea to follow those.
So now I know this.
Yeah, right. And it's like, I learned that about myself, but also Caroline learned that about me.
Right.
And
it's, and then I don't function very well when I'm hungry. And
who does, right?
Right, yeah. But we got to the point on the bike trip where Paul would be like, do you need a snack?
When was the last time you ate?
I'd just be like, no. Like, wait, I'll try it. Eat a little bar and be like, okay.
I guess I am happier.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
It's a lot of
communication. Learned about each other, learned about how we travel together and communication and... Overall, it went really well. I mean, I think we had like maybe like one fight.
That's all?
Do you even remember what it was?
Oh, the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, she remembers. Oh, man.
Because I won.
I'm sorry.
I was hoping you had forgotten.
I'm sorry I asked.
No. It ended in cake, so it was really good.
There's nothing wrong with that.
If you count that, it was barely a fight. Our argument in Michigan over whether we were going to stay on Lake Michigan or not.
Oh, right. Yeah. that night ended really well.
Yeah.
I wanted to press on, and we met some people that were like, you should stay at our house.
And,
no, serial killers. It's like,
were from Michigan.
Who all were like doctors from Chicago.
Right.
And like insanely rich.
Really,
and,
really rich.
And
so you were in Kalamazoo?
We were south of there on the lake. I don't remember the name of the town, but yeah. So anyway, eventually
we met them. They were cycling. They invited us
and we went to stay there. Basically I won the argument and we went to stay there and they made us homemade chocolate cake and took us out to dinner and had this like luxurious
like his sister
mansion
was there,
that
and she
overlooked
was like a chef and
Lake Michigan and
oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
losing fights, like, I'm sure you felt really good about losing that fight there.
I forgot about this entirely because, like, I completely
like,
conceded.
Cake and everything else was,
I'm pretty sure when we got there, I conceded, like, I was wrong. This was the right decision. Because I think they, like, took us out to dinner at, like, an Italian restaurant and, like, paid our way for a meal and food and then made us desserts and then. Like, we basically had rain. Like, she made, like, fresh blueberry muffins the next morning then, too. Yeah. Like, oh, from scratch.
That's
like,
incredible.
Yeah. It was the right choice.
Right.
Listen to Caroline.
There we go. Well, are there places online that people can find you? Like, if they want to find out what you're up to these days, do you have web public things? Or are you just, like...
The only thing that we keep up on any regular basis is Rando Awesome's website.
Okay.
Oh, so which we should get into. We should discuss a little bit further. So, the whole Random Awesome thing was because... When we got married, we discussed in detail, in serious conversation, changing our last name from Zavikovsky to Awesome.
Oh, well, and that's a cool idea.
So, and ultimately, we just decided not to. It's so like, there's a number of reasons why one doesn't just change their last name
to
Awesome.
Right.
So when we got the pug, we just decided his last name should be Awesome.
Nice. So that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Okay, so Rando, is it randoawesome.com?
Rando Awesome has his Facebook page.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, so we'll link to that. Excellent.
Excellent. He runs his own Facebook page, by the way.
Nice.
He'll get so
and
many
our cross-country blog is still up in the world, but it hasn't been updated since 2011.
Okay. So. Yeah, we ran a very extensive blog.
Because you finished.
All right.
Right, yeah.
Well, we'll nab that address from you and put that on our website as well, so people can find your
adventures. It's a great story, nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, do you guys have time to do some news stories with us?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, let's do some news, and we'll save our mail for tomorrow because we're doing another show tomorrow. So, So for all you listeners out there, look forward to it. Here come our headlines.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights.
I just noticed that I bob my head to that song every time it plays.
It's all hard not to.
How do you know every time when you just noticed it?
Well, but I noticed a pattern.
Because the muscle memory is
there. It's like, I'm doing this like I always do.
Yeah.
That was a good question. It's got me, has me thinking. All right, from the Oregonian. This is a video of a TriMet bus driver who saves a girl from getting hit by an impatient driver in Northeast Portland.
Ooh.
TriMet bus driver Matthew Higgins may have saved a young rider's life with a few quick horn honks last week. On Tuesday morning, Higgins stopped the number 70 bus on Northeast 33rd Avenue across from Grant High School to let a student off. As the girl started to cross the busy two-lane street in front of the bus, Higgins glanced at his side mirror, noticed the impatient driver of a silver car behind him was zipping around the bus. By the way, that's illegal. He hit the bus.
Hitting the horn or passing a bus?
Passing the bus.
Yes, yes, it is.
He hit the bus horn three times to get the girl's attention. Too bad you can't hear it in the video above. And motioned for her to stay put. She stopped.
Okay, so that's a TriMet driver saving someone's life.
Damn right.
Yes. Wait, hang on. That deserves this. Oh, no, sorry, that's the wrong one.
Oops.
There we go. That's a Max Bell, but you get the picture. Transit. Transit operators are our heroes.
Damn right. And the full article, which we've linked to, has the video, but then also goes on. This is Joseph Rose, by the way. Goes on to reiterate another time in which his wife was almost run over.
Ah.
And if it wasn't for the bus driver.
It reminds me of that public safety campaign that TriMet put out, I believe, that says slow down, don't go around. And that's for people passing on the right side. But it stands to reason. Like anytime there's a solid yellow line, just take a couple extra minutes and do your thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Speed.
Yeah. Speed kills.
Speed
and it's
kills.
it's really overrated. We don't recommend it.
I'm having issues about speed.
Can we just rename cars Deathmobiles?
We should.
It's like a rebranding of the entire... automobile industry.
I think so.
I think it would work.
And they're good for what they're good for. And yet, like, there are so many other ways to get around the town.
So many better ways.
Yeah.
Next up from bikeportland.org. Biking would win big under the Oregon Climate Carbon Tax Plan. A new advocacy group called Oregon Climate is pushing a concept called Tax and Dividend. Instead of sending the proceeds into government coffers, all the revenue collected from wholesale fossil fuel transactions, gasoline to distributor, coal to a power plant, and so on, would be pooled and divided evenly among Oregons in the form of checks worth an estimated $500 to $1,500 per year. Rather than bundles of piecemeal decision-making, you'd have an economy-wide transition to walkable, bikeable, livable cities. Camilla Thorndike, Executive Director of Oregon Climate. In addition to that benefit to people who get around Portland by bicycle, Oregon Climate's proposal might also open another door in the transportation world, because a tax on greenhouse gas emissions would count as a tax on gasoline. Oregon Climate's proposal would only work if the state votes to amend and repeal its 35-year ban on using gas taxes for auto fees for anything except roads.
Okay, so we're saying that like we could use the money that's coming out of public funds in a better way.
In a much better way.
Okay, and it could benefit people.
For sidewalks, for bike infrastructure,
right.
For bike parking, for better crosswalks.
And this is something to underline. We're not just saying like, we like bikes, we want better things for bikes. This is for anybody who gets around, and we believe that there is a better way to get around than in a combustion engine
vehicle. There are
vehicle.
So many better ways.
Yeah.
All right, next up.
Thank you, sir.
I've been
Thank
having
you.
Issues with fast drivers lately. And
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're lame.
It's showing.
They are lame.
Next up, from BikeRadar.com, The Angry Asian, Things You Should Never Say to Your Bike Shop Mechanic.
And this guy has an awesome blog that I just discovered.
Yeah, and so you sent this along to me and said,
yes.
we should feature this.
We should.
And I read it, and I said, yes, we should.
And now you're featuring it.
Check out our process.
Good bike shop mechanics are the unsung heroes of every rider. The best ones are bona fide wizards, magically transforming our rickety heaps into well-oiled machines, deftly silencing the most elusive creaks, miraculously extracting the most woefully seized bottom bracket, fixing the hopelessly unfixable. But there are good reasons why bike shop mechanics are often pretty surly.
These reasons right here.
And yeah, he goes into detail in the full article, but I'll just go one by one. First, quote, but I can get that way cheaper online. Two, you just installed a new tube last week and I got another flat on my next ride. What gives?
Who would have thought?
Three, this part broke when I crashed. It's covered under warranty, right?
And some are, but
some aren't. Most likely.
Pretty sure bike
if you
tubes, right?
It,
your bike tubes. If you pop it,
warranty.
Under warranty. Right?
Four, no? That only took you 5 minutes to do. How is that $10?
Because it's a fucking bike shop.
Wait, $10? That's a
yeah,
deal.
That's a fucking deal, man.
No kidding.
Five, can you just show me how to do that?
Just don't do your job. I don't want to pay you, but show me how to do it.
Can you do something extra on
free
top
education.
Of your job?
It's called YouTube.
Six, I just finished 15th in my weekend's Cat 3 race, so you should totally sponsor me. Can you give me a deal on that? Have you ever like tried to get a deal from a bike shop, by the way?
That reminds me of...
It is the most uncomfortable discussion. Oh. I feel ashamed for asking.
Oh, that means that you have.
Yes, I have.
It reminds me of This American Life where they asked about the good guy discount, where it's like you say to a salesman like, so I'm a good guy, you're a good guy, is there a discount? Which is like categorically not really a good guy.
That's true.
Yeah.
Like if you're asking.
Yeah. Seriously. If you're really a good guy, you don't need to ask for the discount.
I'm gonna go to a bike shop and just give them like a random $15. That's for the discount you.
That's
gave
for the
me.
Discount.
I'm
you
sorry.
Gave some asshole.
I'm sorry.
Although if you, I will say this: if you're a member of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, you do get a discount at various bike shops around town. I take advantage of that because I'm a member.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Next, can I borrow a insert tool here? Again, probably not going to happen from your bike shop.
Can I borrow that thing you paid money for and actually charge to use?
And then probably
the
break
is,
it.
Is that hearing that, I was like, "That was that the reaction to, you know, that he was like, can I borrow a tool? And
you
like,
can insert that tool
that.
Right there.
You can insert, yeah.
Next. I've got a big race on Sunday. It's Friday evening. Can I pick this up tomorrow?
Well, if you're at Velocult, yes.
That's true. 24-hour.
They got that 24-hour. Yeah. But most places, no.
10. This is when my housemate was like, yeah, I hate hearing this. I was just riding along.
And suddenly something happened.
Suddenly this.
Right. You've been riding along for like 3 years and suddenly, boom.
That did happen to my front fork.
Well, yeah, that's why there's warranties on stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, how much miles or how many miles had that front fork been on beforehand? Like, usually there's something going on that has happened before the breakage.
It was a custom-built bicycle,
and
it was day one of our
tour.
Let's call this one, like, not your fault.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
For example, my frame, let's say, like, that's after I got back.
That's the only time I was just riding along a pond.
could possibly be.
I was not doing anything.
It's very rare.
Yeah.
Well, it's like me. Like, I took my bicycle frame touring on, like, 3,000 miles
I was like, I was just on my honeymoon.
Right.
And it just broke.
I was just riding 3,000 miles, and suddenly my frame just, like, fell apart. Yeah.
This last one is oddly specific.
Oh, right. Because he's the angry Asian.
Right. You're from Taiwan? Did your parents build this bike?
And he goes into detail. Up the middle finger.
He goes into detail how like that was actually asked him at his shop. Yeah.
Fucking stupid.
And that's not even ignorance is still there.
Yeah, that's not even that's barely bike mechanic related. That's stupidity.
No. It's
writ large.
And I'm sure the person thought like, "Oh, he will get a chuckle out of this." You are not funny. You are not funny.
All points bulletin. Racial humor, not funny.
Not funny.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's a fantastic article. So, I do want to highlight, this is in mail. We'll probably talk about it tomorrow, too. But new donors, Christy and Caleb.
Thank you!
As far as I know, they're not a couple. They're probably from vastly different parts of the country. But thank you to both of you for helping us out. If you enjoy this show, listener, and you want to help us out, there's a Patreon campaign for the Sprocket Podcast. It's on our website at thesprocketpodcast.com. So thanks to all. And to certain people who donate a certain amount, we're sending a specially tailored care package from Portland with Portlandy things in it.
And speaking of donors, Tammy and Logan are in town, and I just want to give them a special shout out.
That's right, because you got to see them in person.
I stopped by there on my way here. They were hanging out at Lardo.
I was dealing with a wardrobe malfunction when that happened. We'll see them. We'll see.
But shout out to Tammy and Logan.
Indeed.
Nice to see you.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's close this thing down. You ready?
Oh. Shit, no, I'm not.
All right, then.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter is Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Thanks to Hurt Bird for our headlines sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
Thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, who's here right in town, Johnny K., Shadowfoot.
Katharina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lane, Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Wise, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, John Blood,
Allison Wiley, Andy Brunner, Dev Nose,
Lars V, Chris Smith, and Christy Kaster. Thank you so much.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Stop going into editing mode.
See, this is where we edit the show. Yeah. We don't usually edit the show, but like at the end,
we're
just coordinating. Like, yeah. All right.
This is usually where we lose steam.
I like to think it's like this epic every time. You're like, are you ready? You ready? I'm like,
no.
You ready now?
No. Okay.
Five more seconds.
Ready, set.
Okay.
It's
we
freaky,
are known
right?
for our hard hitting.
That's right. Yeah, we're harder than Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck it, we'll do it live.
Yeah. Now that the invites you've been sending to Bill O'Reilly have just, you know, he keeps declining. One of these times, he's going to take you up on it.
That motherfucker. Someday he's going to come in here. We're gonna rip him upside one side and down the other.
Shut up! Just shut up! Shut up!
You think you know conservatism? Look at us.
You had your 15 minutes, Bill. It's our turn.
You're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.